The Nine Attributes of the Buddha by Sele Susila. Part 2, Chapter 8. Budo, the Enlightened Awakened One. Budo means awakened. The Buddha was awakened with the knowledge of the fruit of liberation. He awakened to everything, the past, present, and future. What does awakening involve? Under the Bodhi tree, the Blessed One was awakened through his own efforts by directly realizing the truth, specifically the Four Noble Truths: suffering, the origin of suffering, the cessation of suffering, and the path leading to the cessation of suffering. The Buddha said, quote, "What must be known is directly known, the truth of suffering. What must be abandoned has been abandoned, the truth of the origin of suffering. What must be realized has been realized, the truth of the cessation of suffering. What must be developed has been developed, the truth of the path leading to the cessation of suffering. Therefore, Brahman, I am a Buddha." End quote. Majjhima Nikaya 92. The Four Noble Truths. In the Great Discourse on Establishing Mindfulness, Maha Satipatthana Sutta, Digha Nikaya 22, the Buddha explained the Four Noble Truths as follows. 1. The Noble Truth of Suffering. Bhikkhus, what is the Noble Truth of Suffering? Birth is suffering. Aging is suffering. Death is suffering. Grief, lamentation, pain, sorrow, and despair are suffering. Association with the disliked is suffering. Separation from the liked is suffering. Not to get what one longs for is suffering. In brief, the five aggregates of clinging are suffering. Bhikkhus, what is birth? Whatever beings, in whatever group of beings, there is birth, existence, emergence, appearance of aggregates, and obtaining of sense spheres. This, bhikkhus, is called birth. Bhikkhus, what is aging? Whatever beings, in whatever group of beings, there is aging, decrepitude, broken teeth, gray hair, wrinkled skin, decline of lifespan, weakening of the sense faculties. This, bhikkhus, is called aging. Bhikkhus, what is death? Whatever beings in whatever group of beings, there is death, passing away, breaking up, disappearance, dying, breaking up of the aggregates, casting off of the body, destruction of the life faculty. This, bhikkhus, is called death. Bhikkhus, what is grief? For one who has, bhikkhus, some sort of misfortune or other, who is touched by some sort of painful thing or another, there is grief, grieving, the state of grieving, inner grief, great inner grief. This, bhikkhus, is called grief. Bhikkhus, what is called lamentation? For one who has, bhikkhus, some sort of misfortune or other, who is touched by some sort of painful thing or another, there are laments, great laments, lamenting, great lamenting, the state of lamenting, the state of great lamentation. This, bhikkhus, is called lamentation. Bhikkhus, what is pain? Any physical pain, physical disagreeableness, painful and disagreeable feelings caused of contact with the body, this, bhikkhus, is called pain. Bhikkhus, what is sorrow? Any mental pain, mental disagreeableness, painful and disagreeable feelings caused of contact with the mind, this, bhikkhus, is called sorrow. Bhikkhus, what is despair? For one who has, bhikkhus, some sort of misfortune or other, who is touched by some sort of painful thing or another, there is desponding, despairing, the state of despondency, the state of despair. This, bhikkhus, is called despair. Bhikkhus, what is suffering of association with the disliked? Here, for that one who has unwanted, unlovely, unpleasant forms, sounds, smells, tastes, tangibles, and thoughts, or for that one who meets, contacts, has connection, and has interaction with those who have ill will, who wish one's harm, who wish one's discomfort, and who wish one's insecurity, this, bhikkhus, is called suffering of association with the disliked. Bhikkhus, what is suffering of separation from the liked? Here, for that one who has wanted lovely, pleasant forms, sounds, smells, tastes, tangibles, and thoughts, or for that one who meets, contacts, has connection, and has interaction with those who have goodwill, who wish for one's good, who wish for one's comfort, and who wish for one's security, mother or father, or brothers or sisters or friends or companions or blood relatives, and then not having meeting, assembly, connection, and interaction with them, this, bhikkhus, is called suffering of separation from the liked. Bhikkhus, what is suffering of not getting what one longs for? Bhikkhus, to those beings subject to birth, a longing like this arises. May I not be subject to birth? May birth not come to me? However, that cannot be obtained merely by longing for it. This is the suffering of not getting what one longs for. Bhikkhus, to those beings subject to old age, a longing like this arises. May I not be subject to old age? May old age not come to me? However, that cannot be obtained merely by longing for it. This is the suffering of not getting what one longs for. Bhikkhus, to those beings subject to illness, a longing like this arises. May I not be subject to illness? May illness not come to me? But that cannot be obtained merely by longing for it. This is the suffering of not getting what one longs for. Bhikkhus, to those subject to grief, lamentation, pain, sorrow, and despair, a longing like this arises. May I not be subject to grief, lamentation, pain, sorrow, and despair? May grief, lamentation, pain, sorrow, and despair not come to me, but that cannot be obtained merely by longing for it. This is the suffering of not getting what one longs for. Bhikkhus, what are the five aggregates of clinging which are suffering? They are material, form, feeling, perception, formations, and consciousness. In brief, the five aggregates of clinging are suffering. Bhikkhus, this is called the noble truth of suffering. Digha Nikaya 12. The five aggregates of clinging. We cling to the five aggregates of material form, feeling, perception, mental formations, and consciousness as mine, I, or myself, by way of craving, conceit, and wrong views. Thus, these five aggregates are the objects of clinging. They are called the five aggregates of clinging. Whether it is past, present, or future, internal or external, blatant or subtle, inferior or superior, far or near, any material whatsoever is the material aggregate. Any feeling is the feeling aggregate. Any perception is the perception aggregate. Any formation is the formation aggregate. Any consciousness is the consciousness aggregate. The similes of the five aggregates. 1. Material form aggregate, Rupa Khanda. Materiality comprises the four primary elements that constitute the physical body of all beings: earth element, water element, fire element, and air, wind element, and the 24 types of matter derived from the four primary elements, called derived matter, Upadaya Rupa. The four primary elements are also called primary properties, Dhatu, because each of them bears their own characteristics. The earth element is called such because its characteristics are solid and rough. Examples would be the hair of the head, hair of the body, nails, teeth, skin, bones, and so on. The water element has the characteristic of flowing or spilling over, exemplified by phlegm, sweat, blood, tears, saliva, urine, and so on. The fire element has the characteristic of cold and hot, and is experienced in the temperature of the body and the heat of the digestive system. The air wind element has the characteristics of pushing or motion, as occurs in breathing, belching, or flatulence caused by moving air through the intestines, and so on. The Buddha compares materiality to foam, which indicates that it is empty, void, and without essence. Quote, Bhikkhus, suppose that this river Ganges was carrying along a great lump of foam. A man with good sight would inspect it, ponder it, and carefully investigate it, and it would appear to him to be void, hollow, and insubstantial. For what substance could there be in a lump of foam? So too, bhikkhus, whatever kind of material form there is, whether past, future, or present, internal or external, gross or subtle, inferior or superior, far or near, a bhikkhu inspects it, ponders it, and carefully investigates it, and it would appear to him to be void, hollow, and insubstantial. For what substance could there be in material form? End quote. Samyutta Nikaya 22.95. 2. The feeling aggregate, Vedana Khanda. Feeling is the unpleasant, pleasant, or neutral impression that arises when one experiences an object. There are 6 kinds of feeling. The feeling that occurs when the eye faculty contacts color. The feeling that occurs when the ear faculty contacts sound. The feeling that occurs when the nose faculty contacts odor. The feeling that occurs when the tongue faculty contacts taste. The feeling that occurs when the body contacts tactile objects. And the feeling that occurs when the mind contacts mental objects. When the 6 sense faculties contact the 6 objects, color, sound, smell, taste, physical sensations, and mental objects, based on these unpleasant, pleasant, and neutral objects, unpleasant feeling, pleasant feeling, and neutral feeling occur. When a pleasant feeling arises, we feel delighted and satisfied, wanting more. Attachment then arises. When these pleasant feelings to which we grasp and attach disappear, we feel miserable, depressed, and disappointed. Unpleasant feeling then takes over. When neutral objects contact the 6 sense faculties, neutral feeling arises, and because of ignorance, we may think that there is no feeling there at all. Whatever feelings arise, they all arise dependent on causes and conditions, and they arise and cease, changing from pleasant feeling to unpleasant, from unpleasant to pleasant. This is the nature of conditioned phenomena. The Buddha said, "Whatever is felt is included in suffering." Samyutta Nikaya 36.11, simply because of its changing nature. The Buddha compared the feeling aggregate to a water bubble, because it is fragile, and the moment it arises, it immediately ceases. It is empty, without essence. Suppose, bhikkhus, that in the autumn, when it is raining and big raindrops are falling, a water bubble arises and bursts on the surface of the water. A man with good sight would inspect it, ponder it, and carefully investigate it, and it would appear to him to be void, hollow, and insubstantial. For what substance could there be in a water bubble? So too, bhikkhus, whatever kind of feeling there is, whether past, future, or present, internal or external, gross or subtle, inferior or superior, far or near, a bhikkhu inspects it, ponders it, and carefully investigates it, and it would appear to him to be void, hollow, and insubstantial. For what substance could there be in feeling? End quote. Samyutta Nikaya 22.95. 3. Perception aggregate, Sanya Khanda. The function of perception is to mark the object when it is first contacted. When the same object reappears in the future, perception identifies and recognizes it to be the same object. Take, for example, one's first time seeing the color red. Perception marks the red color. And in the future, when the color red appears again, perception recognizes it to be red instead of white. It's like a signature. There are 6 kinds of perception. Perception of form, perception of sound, perception of odor, perception of taste, perception of touch, and perception of mental objects. We are frequently fooled by perception, which often perceives the impermanent as permanent, the unpleasant as pleasant, and the impure as pure. Such distorted perception, Sanya Vipalasa, is caused by ignorance, not seeing things as they really are. It is just like the tale of the farmer who, to scare deer away from his farm, set up a scarecrow holding a bow and arrow. When a deer comes to the farm, because it has made a previous mark of hunter, it sees the scarecrow, misinterprets it to be a real hunter, and runs away in panic. Similarly, all conditioned phenomena are impermanent, suffering, and not self, but beings, under the influence of distorted perception, regard them as permanent, pleasant, and with self. Therefore, various kinds of attachment arise, and suffering ensues. The Buddha compared the perception aggregate to a mirage, because it is tricky, empty, void, and without essence. Quote, suppose, bhikkhus, that in the last month of the hot season, at high noon, a shimmering mirage appears. A man with good sight would inspect it, ponder it, and carefully investigate it, and it would appear to him to be void, hollow, and insubstantial. For what substance could there be in a mirage? So too, bhikkhus, whatever kind of perception there is, whether past, future, or present, internal or external, gross or subtle, inferior or superior, far or near, a bhikkhu inspects it, ponders it, and carefully investigates it, and it would appear to him to be void, hollow, and insubstantial. For what substance could there be in perception? end quote. Samyutta Nikaya 22.95. 4. Mental formations aggregate, Sankhara Khanda. There are 52 mental factors described in the Abhidhamma. Aside from feeling and perception separated out as the feeling aggregate and perception aggregate, the remaining 50 mental states are referred to as the mental formations aggregate. Greed, aversion, delusion, doubt, conceit, envy, sloth, faith, mindfulness, shame, fear of evil deeds, and wisdom are all included under the mental formations aggregate. Volition or will is the spark that is responsible for any kama performed. The Buddha said, "It is volition I call kama. For having willed, one performs an action through body, speech, or mind." The Buddha compared the mental formations aggregate to the trunk of a plantain tree. The trunk is composed of layers of peel, and each layer has its own unique characteristics. The mental formations aggregate is also formed by various mental states, and each mental state has its own unique characteristic and function. For example, greed's function is to hold on or attach to an object, while the function of mindfulness, sati, is to remember the object, and so on. When a mental state arises, after performing its function, it ceases immediately. Therefore, mental states are also empty, void, and without essence, like the trunk of a plantain tree. The Buddha said, quote, "Suppose, bhikkhus, that a man needing heartwood, seeking heartwood, wandering in search of heartwood, would take a sharp axe and enter a forest. There he would see the trunk of a large plantain tree, straight, fresh, without a fruit bud core. He would cut it down at the root, cut off the crown, and unroll the coil. As he unrolls the coil, he would not find softwood, let alone heartwood. A man with good sight would inspect it, ponder it, and carefully investigate it, and it would appear to him to be void, hollow, and insubstantial. For what substance could there be in the trunk of a plantain tree? So too, bhikkhus, whatever kind of mental formations there are, whether past, future, or present, internal or external, gross or subtle, inferior or superior, far or near, a bhikkhu inspects them, ponders them, and carefully investigates them. As he investigates them, they appear to him to be void, hollow, and insubstantial. For what substance could there be in mental formations?" End quote. Samyutta Nikaya 22.95. 5. Consciousness aggregate, Vijnana Khanda. Consciousness can be described as being aware of or knowing the object. It merely knows an object. People often identify this knowing of an object, this consciousness, as a self. They consider this function of consciousness, this awareness of an object, as who they are. There are 6 types of consciousness: eye consciousness, ear consciousness, nose consciousness, tongue consciousness, body consciousness, mind consciousness. Generally, people believe that the 6 types of consciousness are immortal and constant. Actually, they're not. When a visible object contacts the eye faculty, eye consciousness arises, seeing the object, and immediately passes away. Eye consciousness cannot discern whether the object is good or bad. When eye consciousness arises, it ceases immediately, followed by another type of consciousness, one after another. Actually, the whole process of seeing is a series of different consciousnesses, each with its associated mental states. Unable to break down the compactness of continuity of consciousness, and the compactness of composite, that each moment of seeing is made of one consciousness and a group of mental factors, people consider I consciousness to be the immortal and constant I. They consider that it is I who sees, and the same I is listening, smelling, tasting, and touching. They do not consider consciousness to be just the self, but even consider it to be the immortal soul that migrates from one life to another. During the days of the Buddha, there was a bhikkhu named Sati who claimed that the Blessed One taught him, quote, "It is this same consciousness that runs and wanders through the round of rebirths, not another," end quote. The Blessed One cross-questioned him, asking him what he meant by consciousness. Sati answered, "Venerable Sir, it is that which speaks and feels and experiences here and there the results of good and bad actions." The Buddha reprimanded him, "Misguided man, to whom have you ever known me to teach the Dhamma in that way? Misguided man, have I not stated in many ways consciousness to be dependently arisen, since without a condition there is no origination of consciousness?" Then the Buddha explained consciousness in detail to him. "Bhikkhus, consciousness is reckoned by the particular condition dependent upon which it arises. When consciousness arises dependent on the eye and forms, it is reckoned as eye consciousness. When consciousness arises dependent on the ear and sounds, it is reckoned as ear consciousness. When consciousness arises dependent on the nose and odors, it is reckoned as nose consciousness. When consciousness arises dependent on the tongue and flavors, it is reckoned as tongue consciousness. When consciousness arises dependent on the body and tangibles, it is reckoned as body consciousness. When consciousness arises dependent on the mind and mind objects, it is reckoned as mind consciousness. Further, the Tathagata used fire as a simile to explain it. Quote, just as fire is reckoned by the particular condition dependent on which it burns, when fire burns dependent on logs, it is reckoned as a log fire. When fire burns dependent on grass, it is reckoned as a grass fire. So, too, consciousness is reckoned by the particular condition dependent on which it arises. When consciousness arises dependent on the eye and forms, it is reckoned as eye consciousness. When consciousness arises dependent on the mind and mind objects, it is reckoned as mind consciousness. End quote. Majjhima Nikaya 38. The Blessed One compared the consciousness aggregate to a magician. Quote, suppose, bhikkhus, that a magician or a magician's apprentice would display a magical illusion at a crossroads. A man with good sight would inspect it, ponder it, and carefully investigate it, and it would appear to him to be void, hollow, insubstantial. For what substance could there be in a magical illusion? So too, bhikkhus, whatever kind of consciousness there is, whether past, future, or present, internal or external, gross or subtle, inferior or superior, far or near, a bhikkhu inspects it, ponders it, and carefully investigates it, and it would appear to him to be void, hollow, insubstantial. For what substance could there be in consciousness? End quote. Samyutta Nikaya 22.95. A magician, by means of magic tricks, creates various kinds of illusions to deceive spectators. In the same way, we are fooled by consciousness, considering the consciousness that sees and hears to be the same self that wanders through the cycle of samsara. Due to being unable to see the rapid arising and ceasing of consciousness in succession as it really is, or to see the function each consciousness plays, people mistakenly attach to the idea that consciousness is an immortal self. This is the way that consciousness deceives people. Of the five aggregates, the form aggregate is materiality, rupa, and the remaining four aggregates are mentality, nama. Thus, the five aggregates are called nama-rupa, mentality and materiality. The five aggregates of clinging, or nama-rupa, are mutually dependent. From their mutual cooperation, the illusion of self arises and leads to the wrong view of self-identification or personality view, sakkaya ditti. A certain bhikkhu once asked the Buddha, Venerable Sir, how does identity view come to be? The Buddha explained to him, quote, here bhikkhu, an untaught, ordinary person, regards material form as self, or self as possessed of material form, or material form as in self, or self as in material form. He regards feeling as self, perception as self, formations as self, consciousness as self, or self as possessed of consciousness, or consciousness as in self, or self as in consciousness. This is how identity view comes to be. Majjhima Nikaya 109. To disentangle the net of identity view, Buddha urged practitioners to regard the five aggregates as, this is not mine, this I am not, this is not myself. Quote, bhikkhus, any kind of material form whatever, whether past or present, internal or external, gross or subtle, inferior or superior, far or near, one sees all material form as it actually is with proper wisdom thus. This is not mine. This I am not. This is not myself. Any kind of feeling whatever, any kind of perception whatever, any kind of formations whatever, any kind of consciousness whatever, one sees all consciousness as it actually is with proper wisdom thus. This is not mine. This I am not. This is not myself. End quote. Why are the five aggregates to be regarded as this is not mine, this I am not, this is not myself? Simply because they are inconstant, suffering, and subject to change. Quote, what do you think, bhikkhus? Are form, feeling, perception, mental formations, and consciousness constant or inconstant? Inconstant, venerable sir. Is what is inconstant suffering or happiness? Suffering, venerable sir, is what is inconstant, suffering, and subject to change, fit to be regarded thus. This is mine, this I am, this is myself. No, venerable sir. End quote. People tend to be ignorant of the teaching of the enlightened ones. They do not have a good understanding of the teachings of the wise, and thus are not well trained in these teachings. They misunderstand the five aggregates to be mine, which corresponds to craving, I, which corresponds to conceit, and myself, which corresponds to wrong view. Thus clinging arises. The five aggregates are conditioned phenomena, sankhara dhamma. They arise dependent upon other dhammas, or conditions. This implies that the five aggregates have no control of their own, anatta. They are impermanent, anicca, suffering, dukkha, and inconstant, viparinama. If even a vast ocean can dry up, what can be said about the inconstant, changeable, temporary five aggregates? Majjhima Nikaya 28. When the five aggregates change due to arising and ceasing, or because of degeneration, immediately sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief, and despair arise. Thus it is said, the five aggregates of clinging are the noble truth of suffering. Quote, the noble truth of suffering should be fully understood. End quote. Samyutta Nikaya 56.11. The Buddha thoroughly understood it. 2. The noble truth of the origin of suffering. The truth of the origin of suffering, Samyudaya Satcha, is the second noble truth. Quote, now this, bhikkhus, is the noble truth of the origin of suffering. It is this craving which leads to renewed existence, accompanied by delight and lust, seeking delight here and there, that is, craving for sensual pleasures, craving for existence, craving for extermination. End quote. The Buddha said craving was the origin of suffering. It was the origin of the continuation of the cycle of birth and death. When the Buddha attained supreme enlightenment, he said to himself, through many a birth in samsara have I wandered in vain, seeking the builder of this house. Repeated birth is indeed suffering. O house builder, you are seen. You will not build this house again, for your rafters are broken and your ridge pole shattered. My mind has reached the unconditioned. I have attained the destruction of craving. End quote. Dhammapada 153-154. There are three kinds of craving. 1. Craving for sensual pleasures, kamatanha, namely the craving for form, sound, smell, taste, touch, and mental objects through the six sense doors. Are not our greedy eyes always seeking forms to see, especially agreeable and beautiful forms? When an agreeable form comes into contact with the eyes, we feel pleasant and gratified. This is how we enjoy sensual pleasures through the eyes. Same as with the other five sense objects. 2. Craving for becoming, bhava tanha, is the craving for continued existence associated with the view of internalism. Such view believes that there is an eternal soul that transmigrates from one life to another life. It is a powerful craving that drives the incessant rounds of rebirth. It is like a person who is drowning and suddenly sees some floating material. He will use all his strength to grasp it, even if it is a foul-smelling dead body, just to save his life. Craving for becoming is driven by ignorance, that is, the ignorance of not understanding the Four Noble Truths. 3. Craving for non-becoming, vibhava tanha, is the craving to not exist. It corresponds to the wrong view of annihilationism, the view that, when a person dies, nothing remains anymore, and there is no effect of karma. Craving, expressing itself in various ways, is the cause of the arising of all suffering and the root cause of incessant birth and death. Craving is just like honey. When ants find honey, they are very happy and immediately swarm into it. To the ants, this sweet thing can be a deadly poison, and because they are not able to identify it as such, all of them eventually drowned. Similarly, beings are deceived by ignorance and craving. Even though there is great danger in sensual desires, they continue to cling and hold on to them tenaciously. Trapped in craving, we are bound in the whirlpool of repeated birth, unable to free ourselves. Even though the numbers of Buddhas who have come into this world are as countless as the sands of the Ganges River, we are still drifting in stressful samsara. The Buddha said, quote, bhikkhus, I do not perceive any single fetter other than the fetter of craving by which beings are so tied and for so long a time run on and wander in samsara. It is indeed through the fetter of craving that beings are tied and for a long time run on and wander in samsara. End quote. Ittivutaka 15. It is interesting to investigate the question, where does craving arise and where does it settle? Quote, whatever in the world has a pleasant or agreeable nature, it is here that this craving arises when it arises. It is here that it settles when it settles down. End quote. Samyutta Nikaya 12.66. We can investigate how delightful things cause craving in human history, relationships, power, sex, possessions, status, alcohol, identification with one's career as a professor, scientist, etc., entertainment, and ideology, among others. Quote, bhikkhus, whatever ascetics and Brahmins in the past, present, and future regard in the world with a pleasant and agreeable nature as permanent, as happiness, as self, as healthy, as secure, they are nurturing craving. In nurturing craving, they nurture acquisition. In nurturing acquisition, they nurture suffering. End quote. Samyutta Nikaya 12.66. The origin of suffering, which is craving, tanha, should be totally cut off. The Buddha said, what should be cut off, I have cut off. By means of the path consciousness of arahatship, he cut off the craving that caused beings to drift in stressful samsara. 3. The noble truth of the cessation of suffering. The noble truth of the cessation of suffering, Nirodha Satcha, is the third noble truth. As craving causes suffering, suffering can only be terminated when the craving is ended. The Buddha explained the third noble truth as follows. Quote, now this, bhikkhus, is the noble truth of the cessation of suffering. It is the remainderless fading away and cessation of that same craving, the giving up and relinquishing of it, freedom from it, non-reliance on it. End quote. Digha Nikaya 22. The cessation of suffering, or in other words, nibbana, should be realized. The Blessed One said, what should be realized, I have realized. How can we abandon craving and realize the cessation of suffering? By walking the Noble Eightfold Path. 4. The noble truth of the path leading to the cessation of suffering. The path leading to the cessation of suffering is the Noble Eightfold Path. Quote, what, bhikkhus, is the path leading to the cessation of suffering? It is the Noble Eightfold Path, namely, right view, right intention, right speech, right action, right livelihood, right effort, right mindfulness, right concentration. And what, bhikkhus, is right view? Knowledge of suffering, knowledge of the origin of suffering, knowledge of the cessation of suffering, knowledge of the way leading to the cessation of suffering. This is called right view. Bhikkhus, what is right intention? Intention of renunciation, intention of goodwill, the intention of harmlessness. This is called right intention. And what, bhikkhus, is right speech? Abstinence from false speech, abstinence from divisive speech, abstinence from harsh speech, abstinence from idle chatter. This is called right speech. And what, bhikkhus, is right action? Abstinence from the destruction of life, abstinence from taking what is not given, abstinence from sexual misconduct. This is called right action. And what, bhikkhus, is right livelihood? Here, a noble disciple, having abandoned a wrong mode of livelihood, earns his living by a right livelihood. This is called right livelihood. And what, bhikkhus, is right effort? Here, bhikkhus, a bhikkhu generates desire for the non-arising of unarisen evil unwholesome states. He makes an effort, arouses energy, applies his mind and strives. He generates desire for the abandoning of arisen evil unwholesome states. He generates desire for the arising of unarisen wholesome states. He generates desire for the maintenance of arisen wholesome states, for their non-decay, increase, expansion, and fulfillment by development. He makes an effort, arouses energy, applies his mind, and strives. This is called right effort. And what, bhikkhus, is right mindfulness? Here, bhikkhus, a bhikkhu dwells contemplating the body as a body, ardent, clearly comprehending, mindful, having removed covetousness and displeasure in regard to the world. He dwells contemplating feelings as feelings, ardent, clearly comprehending, mindful, having removed covetousness and displeasure in regard to the world. He dwells contemplating mind as mind, ardent, clearly comprehending, mindful, having removed covetousness and displeasure in regard to the world. He dwells contemplating phenomena as phenomena, ardent, clearly comprehending, mindful, having removed covetousness and displeasure in regard to the world. This is called right mindfulness. And what, bhikkhus, is right concentration? Here, bhikkhus, secluded from sensual pleasures, secluded from unwholesome states, a bhikkhu enters and dwells in the first jhana, which is accompanied by thought and examination, with rapture and happiness born of seclusion. With the subsiding of thought and examination, he enters and dwells in the second jhana, which has internal confidence and unification of mind, and is without thought and examination, and has rapture and happiness born of concentration. With the fading away as well of rapture, he dwells equanimous and mindful and clearly comprehending, he experiences happiness with the body. He enters and dwells in the third jhana, of which the noble ones declare, he is equanimous, mindful, one who dwells happily. With the abandoning of pleasure and pain, and with the previous passing away of joy and displeasure, he enters and dwells in the fourth jhana, which is neither painful nor pleasant, and includes the purification of mindfulness by equanimity. This is called right concentration. This is the noble path leading to the cessation of suffering. End quote. The noble eightfold path can be divided into the threefold training, morality, sila, concentration, samadhi, and wisdom, panya. Morality, sila, is right speech, right action, right livelihood. Concentration, samadhi, is right effort, right mindfulness, and right concentration. Wisdom, panya, is right view and right intention. The Noble Eightfold Path is also called the middle way because it avoids two extremes. First, the extreme of indulgence in sensual pleasure. Quote, this is low, vulgar, the way of ordinary people, unprofitable, harmful, end quote. Samyutta Nikaya 56.11. The Bodhisattva lived his royal, luxurious life for 28 years, but deep in his heart he felt spiritual poverty. He understood that it was not the true path to liberation, but leads to mental degeneration and more lust. Second, the extreme of self-mortification. Quote, this is painful, ignoble, and unprofitable. End quote. Samyutta Nikaya 56.11. The Bodhisattva himself practiced 6 painful years of self-mortification, thinking he could be liberated by it. After 6 years of painful struggling, he gained no insight. He finally realized such practice causes pain and weakens mental and physical health. Avoiding these two extremes, the Buddha walked the middle path, the Noble Eightfold Path, to full development. Thus, the Buddha said, what should be developed, I have developed. The Buddha completely awakened to the Four Noble Truths. He said to the Brahmin Sela, quote, what must be known is directly known. What must be developed has been developed. What must be abandoned has been abandoned. Therefore, Brahmin, I am a Buddha. End quote. Majjhima Nikaya 92. Rare is the arising of the Buddha in this world. The most admirable point is not only did the Buddha comprehend the Four Noble Truths for himself, but he was also able to expound them so that all beings could benefit, awaken from ignorance, and reach the cessation of suffering. Pacheka Buddhas have also awakened to the Four Noble Truths, but they are unable to proclaim this profound teaching to others, to help others to be free from the suffering of the cycle of birth and death. To become a Sammasambuddha, it takes a Bodhisattva a minimum of 4 incalculable aeons and 100,000 great aeons to accomplish the 10 perfections. Hundreds of Pacheka Buddhas may appear in the same period, but there will never be 2 Buddhas at the same time. It is therefore very precious and extraordinary for a Buddha to appear in the world. As the Buddha said, quote, it is difficult to be born a human. Difficult is this life of mortals. It is difficult to hear the true Dhamma. Difficult is the arising of Buddhas. End quote. Dhammapada 182. The first messengers of truth, Dhammaduta. 2 months after the Buddha's enlightenment, 60 disciples from distinguished families had become his arahat disciples. Out of compassion for many, the Buddha decided to send them as messengers of truth to propagate the Dhamma. Before dispatching them in various directions, he exhorted them as follows. Free am I, O bhikkhus, from all bonds, whether divine or human. You too, O bhikkhus, are free from all bonds, whether divine or human. Go forth, O bhikkhus, for the good of the many, for the happiness of the many, out of compassion for the world, for the good, benefit, and happiness of gods and men. Let not two go by one way. Preach, O bhikkhus, the Dhamma, excellent in the beginning, excellent in the middle, excellent in the end, both in the spirit and in the letter. Bhikkhus, proclaim the holy life, altogether perfect and pure, because there are beings with little dust in their eyes who, not hearing the Dhamma, will fall away. There will be those who understand the Dhamma. I too, O bhikkhus, will wander elsewhere to preach the Dhamma. The Buddha and his disciples, with no permanent abode, alone and penniless, with only robes and alms bowl, like the bird only carries its wings, wandered from place to place to bring hope to people. End of chapter.